The House Committee on Veterans Affairs, full committee, will come to order March 8th, 2006. We are here today to learn more about the promise and progress of collaboration in the provision of health care. I'd like to thank all of our panelists today for their testimony. We especially welcome the Assistant Secretary of Defense, Winkenwerder, who I believe is you're making your first visit to the committee in this second session, the second year of this session. We appreciate your presence. And Dr. Greenberg, Mr. Moreland, and Mr. Smithberg? No. Who also are on the next panel before you're traveling to Washington so we can learn more on a topic that grows more important by the minute and one that holds great promise for the future of VA and perhaps your own institutions. Dr. Perlin, as always, you've become a favorite face when it comes to the topic of the healing arts. And to Mr. McLean, my respect for you continues to grow, and we appreciate your presence here today. And I want to thank you for your role in the Gulf Coast Planning Group and your leadership with regard to the quote, Charleston model. It's kind of interesting. That's what everybody seems to be calling it, Dr. Perlin, the Charleston model. And both of you are to be congratulated for your work with MUSC. And I look forward to hearing about your experience to date, especially with regard to the Gulf Coast Planning Group and the Charleston model. The complexity of medicine today is unprecedented, so it's very expensive. And so is the expectation among Americans that when they need medical care, that it will be there for them. That this has become a reasonable expectation among Americans, an expectation that in practice is usually fulfilled. And that is a profound blessing of our economic, technological, and cultural progress. And we cannot permit this progress to lapse. Along with the complexity and escalating cost, the very nature of healthcare delivery has been revolutionized in the last 15 and 20 years. The rise of outpatient medicine and the fruits of preventative care have rendered much of our inpatient facilities underused and even some perhaps obsolete. As we look to expand VA's outpatient capabilities, we also look to enhance and modernize its inpatient care. Conceivably, it is the more critical of the two, for it is the most acutely ill patients who are admitted to the hospital. I believe that the idea of collaboration, whether it's the collaboration between government agencies or between the public to state entities, promises significant efficiencies as we move down this next stretch in the path of the 21st century health system. Of course, the sharing is not a new concept. With its affiliations among the nation's teaching universities, the VA has been sharing human capital for years. Half of the doctors in America were trained in VA hospitals. In Charleston, South Carolina, some 90% of the doctors at the Medical University of South Carolina also practiced medicine at the Ralph Johnson VA Medical Center, just a stone's throw away. VA and DOD began sharing resources in 1982 with the passage of a law that directed them to pool resources, increase efficiencies, and reduce redundancies. In a sign of progress, the 2002 agreement between the Navy and the VA to share facilities in North Chicago is much closer to being fulfilled. Collaboration with the military helps perfect the seamless transition of servicemen into the VA and back again to active duty or even back to the civilian world. Collaboration with medical universities is a logical next step from shared personnel to shared facilities. This benefits veterans and the country with better access and enhances the quality of care. It is our goal that that may be perfected. If we can do that at the same time and save money, increase the life cycle of these facilities, and increase the quality of care, it's a win-win situation for the federal government and the states. And we're building off of the win-win situation that we have with regard between VA and DoD facilities. So the challenge, as we know, is not determining if this is feasible or a worthwhile concept. It is determining where an already proven concept can next be applied and how best we can apply it to achieve greater efficiencies, better quality of care, improved access to care, and still retain the identity of VA's healthcare system. I will hazard a guess that the testimony submitted today from the Veteran Service Organizations will urge us to ensure that in any collaborative undertaking, the VA retains managerial control and ensures that the veterans are seen in a uniquely, quote, veterans environment. Those are appropriate concerns, and I think they are also manageable concerns. The high expectations among those whom we serve, be they Dr. Perlin's veterans or Dr. Greenberg's patients, it is established, will grow, and must be met with state-of-the-art service and must be provided on a sustainable basis. I believe that taking advantage of the leverage all local healthcare economics through strategic collaborative partnership is one powerful approach to accomplishing a mutual goal. I ask unanimous consent that a statement by the ranking member, Lane Evans, be submitted for the record. Hearing no objections, so ordered. If any member would like to have an opening statement, I will yield. Recognize Chairman Brown for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you know, the committee has expended a great deal of effort over several years to ensure that VA considers all alternatives when contemplating new facilities and delivery of health care. I'm excited about today's hearing as it will allow us a good opportunity to hear from Department-affiliated organizations and Department of Defense on the progress that has been made across the country. Mr. Chairman, I am especially pleased that Charleston is well represented here today by my friend, Dr. Ray Greenberg, President of Medical University. I'd like to welcome him back to our nation's capital and to this hearing today. While it's always good to see friends, I'm especially interested in sharing information with our colleagues regarding the collaborative model that has been successfully developed in Charleston between the VA and the Medical University. I'm equally interested in completing the model's development and exporting it to other areas of the country. While similar collaborative efforts may be appropriate, not the least which may be New Orleans, while this model has already served the VA well, I expect that over time the department will find increasing utility in it. To that end, I look forward to engaging Mr. Smithberg from Louisiana State University during the second panel in order to get a clearer picture of what a collaborative facility may look like in the Gulf Coast region. I appreciate him joining us today, and I hope that the work we have done at Charleston helps to fuel his efforts in Louisiana. In a similar vein, I am thrilled to have Dr. Wickenwerter with us here today to speak to some of the collaborative opportunities that have been undertaken by the VA and Department of Defense. Like the Charleston model, I'm interested in finding out what types of models may help fuel additional collaboration between the departments, whether it's North Chicago, Las Vegas, or something in between. In my mind, and I think you share this view, Mr. Chairman, collaboration is becoming increasingly essential in delivering health care across the nation. So long as we remain true to the distinct identity of the VA, and so long as we ensure the continuing quality associated with VA care, we should embrace opportunities to maximize local health-related economies. Our Charleston experience has taught us a lot. We can improve the quality of care delivered, the efficiency of the care delivered, and we can accomplish it without dramatically increasing the life cycle cost of the new facility. Again, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your leadership in this area, and I stand ready to assist you in leveraging our work in Charleston against future collaborations around the country. And I yield back the balance of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also would like to thank Chairman Brown for his hospitality when he went to Charleston to look at the collaborative effort, as well as Chairman Boyer. Mr. Chairman, since we have Dr. Perlin and Dr. Wickenwerter with us today, I'd like to actually, they don't need to respond, but I'd like to ask them, use my time for opening statement, to request some important data that you could aid the committee as it works to provide appropriate mental health services to returning OIF and OEF veterans, which actually could help us if there might be a potential to look at other collaborative efforts as we deal with the mental health issue. And Dr. Perlin, if you would provide the committee with OIF and OEF healthcare utilization data generated by your office for public health and environmental hazard, that would be helpful. And Dr. Winkenwerder, would you please provide the committee with an analysis of the outcomes of DOD health reassessment surveys of OIF and OEF veterans, particularly pertaining to their mental health concerns? And I do want to thank both panels, members, for panelists for coming today. Looking forward to your testimony. And, Mr. Chairman, as we receive the information from both doctors, particularly in light of the recent Army study, which shows one in three veterans have sought veterans' mental health services, I think it's important that probably the full committee have a hearing on this and see if there are ways that we can look at making sure that the services of returning veterans or troops are in capability of these two agencies are able to respond to the needs of men and women returning home. So I think it would be important if we could have a hearing on that and also see if there are ways that we might be able to assist in collaborative effort, in this particular area. So with that, I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for having this hearing, and will yield back the balance of my time.
Appreciate the gentleman's contribution. Chairman Miller, you're now recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've all seen some of the benefits of collaboration in our country. And in a time when the need for more efficient spending could not be more evident, it's refreshing to see opportunities for our nation's citizens to get the most for their tax dollars. As we find the health care needs of our nation's veterans changing every day, it's imperative that we in Congress work with the Department of Veterans Affairs to ensure delivery of the new health care needs. In collaboration with medical institutions as well as the Department of Defense are two of the best ways of going about this. Equally important is providing access where veterans need it most. Our nation is a constantly changing landscape, and so VA must maintain a sense of flexibility and anticipation as demographics shift. That is certainly no easy task, but it is still an aspect of the VA's mission to serve those who bravely have served this country. I'd like to thank all who are testifying before us today as they outline ways to better accomplish this mission. But I'd also like to emphasize that collaboration should not be forced. The collaborative conditions need to occur where we know the veterans are, where we know more veterans will be coming. You all know that my district in Northwest Florida is home to one of the largest veteran populations in the nation, as well as home to five military installations. Some of these installations will become dramatically larger over the next few years as a result of the 2005 BRAC process. Already in an area specified in CARES as an underserved market, anyone can now see that Northwest Florida is going to become even more underserved. The growth rate of the veterans population was strong long before CARES came out and long before BRAC, and it's my hope that VA will continue to focus on an efficient delivery of needed health care by looking at the future as well as the present. Yield back.
Mr. Reyes, you're now recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, too, would join you in welcoming our guests here today in the three panels. But I would like to associate myself with the comments of my colleague, Mr. Miller from Florida, because my area, my region, like his, we'll be seeing some substantial growth under the decisions of BRAC, and so I would hope that we're able to work as additional troops come in with both the VA and Department of Defense to do as much as we can to facilitate both active duty and the veteran population. My region has about between 70 and 80,000. Veterans, and we have one of the projects. In fact, we just celebrated the 10th anniversary of the partnership. For me, it's not a collaborative effort; it's a partnership between the VA and William Beaumont Hospital. And while I'll have some questions when it's appropriate, Mr. Chairman, I understand that some committee staff during the last break went to El Paso to look at the VA-Beaumont relationship. And I was wondering, Mr. Chairman, would it be possible to better coordinate that with the member from the area? And the reason I ask you is because, as you know, I've requested a field hearing for the El Paso area for my district, again, because of the large population of veterans in the region. And it would have been helpful for me to know that they were coming, because I would have had the opportunity to show them a little bit more than just that relationship between the VA and Beaumont. So if we can do a little better job of coordinating, I would appreciate that.
That is unfortunate. It was committee travel of the ONI subcommittee, of which you are a member, and the minority was invited to participate in that trip by staff and declined. Okay. But we will improve direct relationship with a member office,
okay,
and that should not occur.
And I only mention it because of that pending request that I have. But I appreciate the opportunity to make those observations in terms of expected growth.
Please recognize, though, of the ONI subcommittee, of the years that I participated, this is a very good, and you know, this is a very good subcommittee.
Yes.
And that staff from both sides try to cover the waterfront. And so majority might be going this way, and minority's going this way, and they do talk to each other. But with regard to if they're going to a member's district, they should let you know.
Yeah.
I apologize for that.
Well, I wasn't seeking an apology. I just would hope that we can maximize those trips, because it's a big country and there are a lot of issues all over the place, and it's a good opportunity that we would have to show them some more.
Well, it's a great facility. Even when I was on,
yes,
the Armed Services Committee,
absolutely.
When I was in charge of personnel in the health delivery system, Secretary Winkenwerder, I've been to that facility, El Paso. They do a great job. I mean, they were one of the early facilities, yeah, early on. But thank you very much.
We're very proud of it, and thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Certainly want to thank the Undersecretary and the other members of the VA staff for being here today to present their testimony. In Mr. Perlin's testimony, he touches on an issue of great importance to veterans, and that's the need to improve access to health care via collaborative efforts. I'm not sure, and maybe you could elaborate on this in your testimony, but I'm not sure if this concept has been picked up any other place, and that is certainly whether it's Ms. Berkeley's area or Mr. Miller's area or Mr. Reyes's area, where there's growing population and more veterans moving in, if any of the developers have said, we'll build a clinic if you'll staff it. We did that in the villages, and I'd just like to know if you're taking this concept anyplace else, because while it's not direct collaborative health provision of health care, it's provision of everything that you need except for the equipment and the staffing. And as you know, bricks and mortar are expensive. And if you can work with various developers, seems to me as if it's a win-win situation of having the developer donate the land, put up the building, and have greater access to veterans clinic facilities. As you know, we're not building the massive hospitals that we once did. Long before I was here, we went to the community-based outpatient clinic, which really provides quicker, less expensive care than in a hospital setting. So I just would encourage the VA to pursue this in other growing veteran areas, because it really is a win-win situation. I thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and I look forward to hearing their testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Udall? You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rather than giving an opening statement, I'd like to, Mr. Chairman, just offer my opening statement for the record, and then just a couple of comments about collaboration in the Louisiana, New Orleans context. It seems to me that the briefings that we've received from members of the House that have been down there on CODELS, the opportunity to talk with members of Congress that represent this area, they're in a very dire situation down there, and anything that you can do in terms of working with other institutions and other medical centers and trying to provide the care, I think, is something that's very welcome. And so I want to thank you for that, and we'll also be visiting with you in the question section. And I'm just introducing my statement for the record. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Hearing no objection, your written statement will be submitted for the record. Ms. Berkley, you're now recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was at another hearing when my staff notified me that Las Vegas was mentioned in my colleague Mr. Brown's statement, and I felt the need to come here and clarify some things. As you know, and I've said this on the record many times, Southern Nevada has one of the fastest growing veterans populations in the country. Currently, Southern Nevada is struggling, and I mean struggling, to meet the needs of the population growth, which has been compounded by the evacuation of the Adelaide Del Guy Ambulatory Care Clinic, outpatient clinic, and its replacement with 10 clinics scattered across the Las Vegas Valley. My veterans also seek care at the Michael O'Callaghan Veterans Hospital at Nellis Air Force Base, where the chairman was kind enough to spend a day with me, seeing exactly what the critical situation is at the VA. I must state for the record that while in some communities, shared facilities between the DOD and the VA work well or may work well, it is not a one-size-fits-all solution for all of us. Las Vegas has had shared facilities. It doesn't work for communities that are growing the way Las Vegas is. Nellis Air Force Base wants its own facility. They need their own hospital. They've got a very active Air Force Base, one of the premier Air Force Bases in the country. Every bed is filled all the time, and we're on divert. The only problem is that every other hospital in Las Vegas is currently on divert. While I understand that in perhaps South Carolina, the shared facilities work very well, they would not work well in Las Vegas, and we are looking forward to our full-service medical complex with an exclusive VA hospital, outpatient clinic, and long-term care facility, and it cannot come soon enough for the veterans that live in my community. We are in a critical situation in Las Vegas, and shared facilities don't work.
As well.
Is that how at you, all?
At all? No, I don't believe you. You can't say that.
In my community, I think it's. It was demonstrated.
I've been there with
you,
and it was great. And anyway,
and I think you shared our pain on that day.
All right. Let me now, before we begin, I'd like to extend a welcome to our new committee member, Mr. John Campbell of California. John Campbell took over the district of the former member Chris Cox before he went over to become the chairman of the Securities Exchange Commission. John Campbell brings to the committee a strong business background. He received a bachelor's degree in economics from UCLA and has a master's degree in public taxation from UCS. Prior to his public service, he was employed as a CPA at the firm of Ernst & Young, where he was the CEO and president of Campbell Automotive Group, which included the Saturn of Orange County and Saab of Orange County. His public service includes serving the California in the State House as a California State Assemblyman and as a California State Senator. Mr. Campbell resides in Orange County, California, and he has one wife and two sons. Is that what that says? That makes you a conservative in the state of California. I can't help myself. I apologize. The gentleman, we welcome you to the committee. Now we will turn to our panel and let's see, who do we give deference to? DOD, VA? Gentlemen, you decide. Dr. Wink. All right, Dr. Perlin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. I ask for our full statement to be submitted for the record.
Your committee will be received. Hearing no objections, so ordered.
Thank you. Veterans Health Administration understands the benefits of collaboration for VA, for veterans, and for the American taxpayer. We're proud of our expanding partnership with the Department of Defense, and I'd like to personally acknowledge and thank Dr. Bill Winkenwerter for his leadership in that regard. We're in the process of creating new and fruitful partnerships with other healthcare providers as well, especially our critical and very valued medical school affiliates. Let me begin by discussing our work with the Department of Defense. As you know, there have already been a number of successful examples of VA-DOD sharing, and perhaps the most far-reaching and ambitious is Chicago, where the partnership between our North Chicago VA Medical Center and the Naval Hospital Great Lakes will result in a joint federal facility. Six working groups are now addressing human relations, information technology, leadership, finance, budget, and clinical and administrative management issues. In Alaska, the Anchorage VA Outpatient Clinic and the Elmendorf Air Force Base have a longstanding joint venture to serve veterans and DOD beneficiaries. Anchorage and Elmendorf are also looking for new areas to collaborate and are currently the site of a budget and financial management demonstration project. In addition, VA is opening a new outpatient clinic in 2008 next to the Elmendorf Hospital. In El Paso, VA has an outpatient clinic co-located at the Beaumont Army Medical Center, as Mr. Reyes alluded, and that is a very successful partnership. Beaumont provides inpatient services to VA patients as well as Department of Defense beneficiaries. And two facilities are truly pioneers in implementation of medical record sharing between our two systems as we work to the total joint interoperability of our electronic health records. I'd note in passing that's the site of one of the pilots in the Bidirectional Health Information Exchange, which I'm proud to report won an Excellence.gov award for departmental data sharing from the American Council for Technology. Our agencies, working together, are serving as a model for our nation to demonstrate how the President's goals and executive order to make electronic health records available to most Americans by 2014 can be met. And I'm honored to serve with Dr. Winkenwerter as a commissioner on the American Health Information Community, which is composed of eight private and eight public sector healthcare leaders. In Charleston, VA and DOD are constructing a new $40 million consolidated medical clinic at Goose Creek in Berkeley County. VA's portion is funded through our minor construction program. By joining forces, VA and DOD have removed their need for separate ancillary and support services, and construction will start this fiscal year, anticipated to wrap up in the fall of 2008. VA is pursuing collaborations with other healthcare providers, and recently we and the Medical University of South Carolina conducted a joint review to identify options for collaboration and sharing in Charleston. The structure used for that review provided useful information that enabled us to identify viable sharing opportunities. The process consisted of a steering group with representation of national and local VA leaders, MUSC leadership, and leadership from the Department of Defense. They reviewed data, including quality indicators, population statistics, care volumes, and costs. Mr. Chairman, let me take this opportunity to thank you and Chairman Brown, the chair of the Health Services Subcommittee, for your leadership in support of this endeavor. I'd also like to thank Dr. Ray Greenberg, the president of MUSC, for his exceptional work and collaborative attitude, which has greatly contributed to a successful outcome. An underlying process critical to the steering group's success was the use of cost-effectiveness analysis. This provided insight into both estimating initial capital costs and the potential savings in lifecycle operational costs. The group identified some short-term options for resource sharing that have already been initiated, and I've asked Mr. Moreland to provide you with an update on the status of that activity in his remarks. The model functions so well in Charleston that I've recently charged a group to conduct a similar review in New Orleans, where the tragedy Hurricane Katrina brought made restoring inpatient services an urgent priority. It offered us an unusual opportunity for new collaboration. This group will study collaborative opportunities between the New Orleans VA Medical Center and Louisiana State University. I was honored to sign a memorandum of agreement with LSU 2 weeks ago to evaluate possibilities to realize efficiencies through partnership. VA's strong partner in this effort, Mr. Don Smithberg, the Executive Vice President of LSU and CEO of their Healthcare Services Division, provided outstanding support and leadership, and he and I look forward to sharing the group's finding with you later this year. Mr. Chairman, VA will continue to look for opportunities to leverage our abilities to improve our ability to provide world-class care to enrolled veterans. Thank you for this opportunity to describe our progress to you.
Thank you, Secretary Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the chance to be here today and the chance to testify together with Dr. Perlin. Let me also thank you for your leadership and for the other members of the committee for your interest in coaxing, persuading, cajoling the VA and DOD to continue to work together. I think we've established a good track record, and I very much would like to see that continue. Having submitted our VA-DOD Joint Executive Council annual report for fiscal year 2005, the accomplishments of the past year are fresh in our minds. We continuously explore new avenues of partnership with the VA through our Executive Council, the VA-DOD Executive Council, and the associated work groups. And just for everyone's benefit, this involves a meeting of Dr. Perlin and myself and our staffs. We meet approximately every 2 or 3 months, and it really is an excellent formal structure and a great vehicle for both departments to jointly address issues, set priorities, and strategic goals, as well as to monitor the implementation of these priorities and to ensure that people are accountable for executing what we're asking them to do. As a companion to the annual report, the VA-DOD Joint Strategic Plan for 2006 through 2008 was just published. This is a roadmap that was recently reviewed and updated to incorporate lessons learned as well as to set more concrete milestones and performance measures. Resource sharing is a vital component of both organizations' healthcare delivery systems. At the end of fiscal year 2005, VA and DOD had 446 sharing agreements covering nearly 2,300 services and 136 VA medical centers reported reimbursable earnings during the year as TRICARE network providers. This is an increase of 59% over the previous year. And my written testimony provides the details on a number of joint facilities with regard to collaboration to improve access to care, and John has covered those well. I will say that I am in total agreement that a great model for resource sharing is the first federal health care facility with a single management structure. In October, I joined John and Deputy Secretary Mansfield attended a ceremony in Chicago to mark the creation of this innovative initiative. The North Chicago Veterans Affairs Medical Center and Naval Hospital Great Lakes are going to integrate all clinical administrative services under one line of authority. This is a new venture. It's a new way of doing business, but we absolutely believe in it, and we believe that it takes constant oversight to make sure that the people on the ground know how to get the job done. Another example, and I agree with Dr. Perlin, is the opportunity for the Keesler Air Force Base VA Biloxi campus area. With the fact that our healthcare facilities in the area received damage and there's an issue there with respect to how to go forward, DOD and VA have established a joint task force to explore the potential for a joint venture medical center. This task force has identified several options for significant partnering. We're committed to moving forward within the next several weeks with the best design for the beneficiaries of the region and for taxpayers. DOD and Navy are also collaborating to finish the DOD-VA Joint Ambulatory Care Center in Pensacola. This project represents one of the largest joint collaborations to date and was made possible by a land use agreement that grew from the VA capital asset realignment for enhanced care or services or CARES decision to expand services in the Florida Panhandle. The facility is currently under construction with a completion expected in January 2008. Another important collaboration is planned in South Carolina. As many of you may know, the 1993 base realignment and closure BRAC action significantly decreased the workload for the 500-bed Naval Hospital in Charleston. Currently, this military treatment facility is a hospital in name only. Inpatient services are performed at a nearby civilian hospital. But what we now have underway is a $35 million fiscal year 2006 construction project that includes approximately 164,000 gross square feet of clinical space. The $4.4 million that VA portion was funded with their minor construction program includes approximately 18,000 gross square feet. By joining forces, VA and DOD have removed the need for separate ancillary and support spaces. Mr. Chairman, again, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. DOD is committed to continued collaboration with the VA. There are some other things that, just in the interest of time, I will not touch on, but I do want to mention in the area of health information the fact that we are now really picking up speed with respect to moving clinical information, health information on separated service members to the VA. And we have moved 3.1 million information on 3.1 million unique patients to the VA electronically. We are now moving pre- and post-deployment health assessment information, and nearly a half a million of those assessments have been moved electronically. And again, I endorse John's comments in the commission. We're really being looked upon as leaders in this whole area of developing electronic, since we both have electronic health records, as to how to share that information and to do it in a seamless and interoperable way. We've got really smart people working on this. They're up to the task, and so we're excited about that. With that, I'll conclude my remarks, and I look forward to any questions.
Let me pick up right where you just left off on IT. We have some ways to go. Our staff had returned from Tampa at the Polytrauma Center, where they were pleased to now see where you have that seamless transition of the electronic medical record. That's our goal. It's going to take us some time to get that throughout the system. Dr. Perlin, Chairman Walsh and I met with the Secretary this morning. I want to thank you for your leadership on the IT. I know you're being responsive to those in the field or giving tremendous pushback, and the Secretary was very complimentary towards you and wanted me to appreciate what a difficult position those in the field are also putting you in, and that he also wants me to trust you to do that which is right. I trust you to do that, which is right, because I know you're coming my way. You're coming the committee's way. And so he told me about the that you all are going to go off and you're going to do your two-day, I don't know what you want to call it, summit or whatever you're going to do this. But the senior leadership council is going to sit down and you're going to work this thing through and make the right judgments. And I believe that's going to happen. We don't have to pound this one anymore. You know the desires of this committee, but we got to see it through. There's a cultural thing. We got to get through this barrier so we can begin to work on these relationships between two major departments of government. So I am I'm a good listener to the Secretary, and he was very complimentary towards you, along with our CIO, and he does want to see the two of you go to dinner. Okay. Before I yield, I want to let the members know we are to have votes around 3:15 to 3:30. We'll push that probably to about 3:40. Secretary Winkenwerder, you have to leave about when?
Approximately 3:15 to 3:20.
All right. We'll try to accommodate the members as much as we can. I tell you what, I'll reserve my questions because I can have pretty quick access to both you gentlemen. Let me yield to Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have several questions for Dr. Perlin. If I can, and I'm going to focus specifically on the report to reestablish a medical center in New Orleans. Was Baton Rouge, an expansion of the Baton Rouge CBOC, considered instead of, again, I'm going back to the issue of the veterans that evacuated and left, and nobody can tell with certainty who is coming back. There is significant discussion about accelerating CBOCs in the outer region because of the increased need for medical care. But it seems to me if you're increasing the size of the CBOCs for the veterans, that the assumption would be that they're going to stay. And therefore, if you rebuild a medical center in New Orleans, you're overbuilding. Or if you are sure that these veterans are going to go back to New Orleans, then you're overbuilding CBOCs. And I'm trying to figure out which is it. And in the same question, if you could answer for me the question of what consideration was given to Baton Rouge in regards to expanding their CBOC and making it a larger facility.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Those are absolutely excellent questions. Let me just start by offering the comment that the Baton Rouge Clinic is actually operating beyond its capacity. In addition to the expanded new CBOC that is there, we were able to obtain a lease on our old CBOC and are operating both. It is clear, just as you've indicated, that some veterans from New Orleans proper, St. Bernard's Parish and Orleans Parish, have likely moved to the periphery to that area, and they're being supported. I think what's so compelling about the New Orleans situation is whether or not those veterans actually return to Orleans Parish and St. Bernard Parish. I think what the data reveal is that there is need for a tertiary medical center in the region. Your question of whether that should be located in New Orleans or Baton Rouge is also an excellent one as to what would have the greatest centrality to the population and where would the resources be in place to support the tertiary care needs. I think that it's fairly evident that there are longstanding and very effective relationships with Louisiana State University and Tulane University in terms of providing this sort of specialty expertise and subspecialty care that make that aspect fairly self-evident. In terms of the centrality, I think that there is also a good history of referral patterns and catchment that shows that New Orleans is in fact a good and central location. So both on the geographical test and the resource test, it would meet the need, and even absent the population being fully restored in the two major parishes, it would still meet the need in terms of population.
If there was never a New Orleans Medical Center, would you be putting one there today?
I think, again, I come back to the issue that...
No, the question is, if there was not a New Orleans Medical Center, would you build one there today?
Yes, sir, we would.
Why?
Because of the ability to affiliate and deliver efficiencies.
Would Tulane and LSU be there if the VA Medical Center hadn't been there?
I'd have to go back and research the history. I think they predated us, though. So the answer is
you're
yes,
sure.
Would. Our building is 50 years old. I believe that they are extant before us. But Mr. Smithberg would be...
So we're doing this. I'm looking through the memorandums between LSU and VA, and I'm looking for, you know, where the veteran gets the best, you know, deal without having to get in a car and drive an inordinate amount of time. And I'm not seeing that. I'm seeing a we build it, maybe they will come back. And, you know, I want you to convince me that the taxpayers of the United States of America should spend $600 million, which is what I understand is coming in the emergency supplemental, to rebuild a medical facility in a declining population.
Your question is absolutely a fair and appropriate one. And in the central southern market area. In fact, there are 377,000 veterans in total. And while it is true that under any scenario, hurricane or not, there would be some decline, there clearly is a population need. As well, in that report, and I'm glad you've had a chance to look at it, you will see that there are a number of options, including not being actually close. And part of the rationale for both VA and I believe for Louisiana State University is the ability to share capital equipment and reduce significantly the capital investments on share infrastructure, share staff, and actually get the taxpayers the best deal in a location that you fairly ask is appropriately close and accessible for
and
the
and I looked in the report. You talked about two independent towers, one for LSU, one for VA. The parking lot would be shared and all the administrative areas, and I understand that. But we're talking about health care for veterans and where the veteran population is. And I find it difficult to understand why we're forcing the issue of going back in with $600 million. The original request was $825 million, but we're looking for $600 million now. Thank goodness it appears that it will require authorization from this committee to be done. But I have a long list of questions that I would like to submit for the record in regards to proof of the numbers that are being used to support what's being requested. And my time is out, and I yield back.
Chairman Miller, you may submit those questions for the record. And please also recognize that Chairman Brown will has the responsibility for holding his subcommittee hearing along with Mr. Michaud on the construction. So you're right, we'll take up these issues in further detail, but you have your right to ask any questions you like, and you may probe. Sir?
May I respond?
Yes.
Given the way appropriations are done at this current time in this Congress, it's nice to see that the appropriators recognize that we have a role as authorizers of the money to be spent. Ordinarily, it would not happen that way. The appropriators would appropriate the funds without it ever coming before this committee. And so I am saluting our chairman for getting us back in the loop.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Michaud?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Perlin, the CARES decision identified 156 new CBOCs by 2012. VA has not funded the bulk of these CBOCs, and it's related to some of the concerns that Mr. Miller has. How will VA keep the CBOCs a priority while pursuing a collaborative effort that with limited funds? Will the new collaboration mean that the efforts to open up the needed CBOCs will be delayed?
Thank you, Mr. Michaud, for that question. I think just the opposite is apt to be true. If we can free up resources through some effective synergies that fundamentally serve veterans, And so let me be very clear that we appreciate the collaboration doing many great things, but ultimately our first responsibility is veterans. We are glad that it will all, these sorts of collaborations will also serve others. But those synergies will allow us to operate more efficiently and provide resources for things such as CBOCs. The other thing that I think is important in terms of the affiliations is that as healthcare moves from the hospital to the clinic, one of the sites for expansion of residency programs, appropriate site for training, something that improves service to veterans but also improves efficiency all around, is the collaborative opportunities for training experiences in those outpatient clinics as well.
Thank you. Mrs. Chairman, in essence of time, I request permission to submit the remaining questions in writing. For the
yes,
record.
Without objection. You have that right.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman Brown, you're now recognized.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Dr. Perlin, overall, what lessons can be learned from the VA's experiences with the joint venture proposal in Denver and in Charleston? And I know we had some differences in the collaboration there.
Well, thank you, Chairman Brown. I know that you're exceptionally familiar with the Charleston model, and I think the fact that it's now called the Charleston model is really testament to it being both a documented process that captures the best of experiences. It really, I think, showed us how important it is to bring together leadership at the very beginning to be able to discuss what the particular needs of each entity are and understand operational realities, capital realities, funds flow, service needs in ways that can potentially be synergistic. I want to commend, again, not only Dr. Greenberg for his leadership in that effort, but Mike Moreland on the next panel, who I think can elaborate on what really now is, I think, and should be a standard for evaluation of potential collaborative opportunities. It's a systematic ability to review finance, government, human resources, and clinical services, and provide a cost-effectiveness analysis, not only to look at initial capital outlay, but how to improve efficiencies.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, one further question. What are the advantages and disadvantages for VA medical centers to enter into a sharing agreement to become TRICARE providers? Is that something that we might work into?
Well, let me respond that I think there are advantages. The common denominator among veterans is that they were service members. And to the extent that we can work together, I believe that we should be working together. And I appreciate the great partnership that has been evidenced by DOD and HOLD in person of Dr. Winkenwerter, as he noted in his testimony, 59% increase over the last year alone.
Congressman, I'll also just add that certainly from my perspective, for the DOD entitled beneficiary population, retirees, as well as active duty and their family, but retirees and their family members, where there's a VA facility available, we encourage that to be used as part of the TRICARE network. We have contracts. And we've also, some time ago, one of the first things we did was to set the payment rate so that it was equal between the VA to the DOD or DOD to VA. And in the past, we'd had problems with disputing, you know, who should get paid what. And we said, this is crazy. Let's just have one payment amount that we agree to. And that's, I think, helped. We continue to encourage. From my standpoint, you know, we've got fixed assets, and our charge is how to fully utilize those fixed assets. And frankly, where we don't need fixed assets, let's not build them. I mean, that's been our approach. We, of course, with the BRAC process, we're consolidating Walter Reed and Bethesda. We're consolidating Brooke Army and Williford Hall, and we're closing 10 other hospital inpatient facilities. And in some of those locations, we'll be looking to the VA as a source for inpatient care. So that's our view of the world, and we want to just keep pushing forward with that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know it's real refreshing to have both of you at the table, and certainly with that cooperative effort. And thank you very much for both coming. And, Mr. Chairman, for the sake of time, I'll just submit the rest of my questions.
Thank you, Chairman Brown. Mr. Reyes, you're now recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'll just have a couple of questions and then have some questions for the record as well. The first one is Dr. Wickenwerter. How will the Defense Health Program funding be allocated to respond to the population shifts due to BRAC and the Army's Overseas Rebasing Initiative? I'm particularly concerned about that because we're going to see growth of between 21 to 24,000 new troops in our area. Will funding for military construction to expand and build new medical facilities be funded out of the existing DHP military construction account, or will they be funded from the BRAC accounts? Also, have these projects, such as the expansion of the Beaumont Army Medical Center in El Paso, been included in the services BRAC military construction plans? And then secondly, can you please tell us how you and your staff are working with the services, from my perspective, especially the Army, which will see major growth in several CONUS bases to ensure that medical services will be available for troops and for their families when they arrive at their new duty stations?
Thank you, Congressman, for that question. The short and quick answer to where are the funds coming from is that they're coming from the BRAC funding, the designated BRAC funding. Some will be paid for with our ongoing military construction accounts, and some, as I understand it, John, would be through Army modularity, would be sources of funds as well. So all three of those. But we clearly have a challenge in front of us, and we're thinking actively right now as we look at the whole issue of BRAC, and we're, as you know, moving towards more joint operation of medical facilities. And traditionally, these have all been funded through individual service lines, but we're giving serious thought to if we're going to have a jointly operated and staffed facility, should we think about a joint funding mechanism and oversight process to ensure that we don't get undue competition between the services and that we ensure that we expend these funds in the most efficient way. Sometimes giving somebody an authority to do that really helps arbitrate the process. So we're doing that. Your second question had to do with
working, especially with the Army, in terms of addressing the growth in the bases to ensure medical services to both the troops and their families when they actually arrive.
When they come back. We're looking to the Army and to Surgeon General Kiley, Army Surgeon General, to identify where there may be a need for more medical resources, be it people or facilities, to handle the additional workload that we do anticipate in certain places. Yours might be one of those locations. I know Fort Drum, New York, Fort Carson, there's a handful of locations. But we will be prepared. We're not taking this off our radar screen at all. But if there's more detail about that we might be able to provide for you subsequently, we'd be glad to do that.
And I will have some additional questions, but I appreciate the time, Mr. Chairman. I yield back. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Campbell? Break for our vote. I'd like to address Charleston model for a second, because what my sensing is that our collaborative opportunity steering group meets. We have a great investment. We have no idea where this is going to take us. We jump into these identified areas on what are possible the no-go areas, so we go into the darkness and define it. That was pretty exciting. So when it's all done, the three of us are standing there, General Love and Mr. McClain and Dr. Perlin, and I don't remember which one of you turns and says, "We've broken a paradigm." I don't remember which one of you said that. And I've never forgotten it, because I was just as stunned, because I had sensing, but it wasn't even where I thought it was going to go, and how it got defined was pretty exciting. And I could sense that from the room, Dr. Greenberg. But my question is, though, where do we go from here? So we've got this Charleston model, and we've got something we're sort of excited about, and we talked about how it can be leveraged, and before we can even define it and proceed it in Charleston, it then gets leveraged into this idea with LSU because of what has happened. And this is called an opportunity. And my gut is telling me that what we did in Charleston is we went through the heavy lift, but there's still work yet to be done. And so are we now yet getting ahead of ourselves? Where are we, quote, on the next phase with regard to the Charleston model? Dr. Perlin?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think if there is a completed product initially, part is the model itself for evaluation. So let me put that aside and come back to Charleston specifically. I think I may have used the term that this is a new paradigm, and it really was a new lens, a new way of looking. I am extremely excited about what it brought us in terms of opportunity. $7 million has been transferred to the Charleston Medical Center, and they will, as quickly as the federal processes allow, contract for the new services, which will bring great new technologies to both veterans and the citizens of the state. The tomotherapy, a type of of radiation therapy that's available nowhere else in the state currently will come to veterans and citizens as a result of this collaboration, as will two angiography suites. And I think the model of putting the capital investment there and receiving reduced rates on services in return is absolutely fantastic. So the $7 million already transmitted. Now, the assessment brought forward a number of different proposals. Admittedly, some were permutations of the others, particularly, if you remember, the A group of models. I have concurred that the analysis is effective. I have nothing to add to it in terms of believing that I can outthink the great work that the group did. And I've submitted it forward to the Department's Capital Asset Management Board for prioritization among all of the construction projects and capital investment activities in the department that the Secretary might consider.
My gut is also telling me we haven't sort of defined criteria on how and where to use such a model. I mean, I kind of look at across the landscape out there and say, okay, let's see. Charleston, the Medical University has a construction project that is in a timeline. Yes, we're able to provide quality services. When does this model fall into that timeline? That's an unknown. We know we're going to be constructing a new hospital in Orlando. We've got one in Las Vegas. We've got one in Denver. And now we've got this in New Orleans. So these are very large construction projects. We haven't been in the building business since, what, 92, 93? So it's been a while since we've been in the building business. And we're about to get in the building business in a very large way. So when we look at this and we go, okay, in Orlando, the state of Florida wants to build a medical university. So my gut's telling me, trying to move in that in close proximity and when they can fall together is a good thing. I also learned then when I'm out with Ms. Berkeley in Nevada that the chancellor of UNLV wants to do a medical university. That's a good thing, you know, to do that collaboration. We didn't do so well in Denver with regard to these initiatives, but it did give us the opportunities of progress because Dr. Greenberg hired the same firm that was used in Denver, and we had the VA and working with Dr. Greenberg in manners in which weren't able to work through in Colorado. And now we've got New Orleans. We have Mr. Miller danced on the edge there with regard to New Orleans, and was about right to go through the door of something very challenging. The President of the United States has said that we're committed to helping build New Orleans. And so now we've got this task. And I understand the sensitivities. I don't live on the Gulf region, such as Chairman Miller, but the sensitivities that trying to service veterans in there, and at the same time, LSU has a challenge. They want to progress. They want to move into the future. If we can do that with them in collaboration and define where it's going to be, I understand where we want to go. Okay, I can embrace that. And while I'm also equally as sensitive to Chairman Miller's concerns. So now let me kind of go in with Chairman Miller for a second. If we're going to do this with regard to New Orleans, and we're closing Gulfport and enhancing Biloxi, what are we doing with a joint facility with Keesler? I don't understand that.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand because we are doing a joint facility with
why? That's my question. Why? I mean, the close proximity of it. With only available dollars, why would we do a – I guess I don't know what you mean by joint facility with Keesler.
What we mean is this, and I don't want to get too far ahead of where the work group is, but the Air Force has a hospital base at hospital at the Keesler base. It was scheduled to be come a clinic originally with a BRAC process rather than a hospital because of the level of utilization and the relatively small population of people being served. One of the thoughts is rather than to rebuild, and it was damaged, significantly damaged in the storm. As I understand it, and I visited the hospital, I didn't visit the VA right after the storm, is that the VA facility is on higher ground, is very nearby. Rather than our again, trying to reconstitute and build and invest heavily in a new hospital structure, we may want to consider using the VA and partnering with the VA to use the VA for an inpatient facility. And even and then I don't know about the outpatient piece yet, whether we build something alongside it or have it on the base or how all it would work. But the point is, it's an opportunity to think freshly rather than both systems just going down their merry paths to recapitalize and rebuild.
All right. Right before I yield to Mr. Baker of Louisiana, Dr. Winkelwerner, I'd like you to know this. That when we went through the budgetary process last year, we learned about more in greater detail how DOD was really cost-shifting dental into the VA. And that was a great concern of mine. And in the 14 years I've been here on Capitol Hill, I've never had a general officer be non-responsive. Twice, my staff put in phone calls to the Surgeon General of the Army, General Kiley, and I've never been stiff-armed before. So once in November and once in December, and I've never heard from him. So let me tell you what that means. That means that he's invited this committee into his business, is what it means. So I have assigned the O&I subcommittee to be in an investigation on the issue. So you can please take that message back to the Surgeon General of the Army that we don't appreciate that type of, conduct. This moment, let me yield to Mr. Baker.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just respond.
I
wasn't aware that there was a concern, and I do find it a bit unusual that General Kiley wouldn't respond to you, not a bit. I don't have an explanation for that.
Invitation's already been out there.
But we'll convey the information, and we have been working together in the dental issue. To my knowledge, it's been worked and worked out. So,
if that fact's true, I'll find out. But it's still, I've never been stiff-armed before, and that's really insulting.
Okay.
Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In light of the votes pending, I shall be brief. I understand also that LSU is scheduled to appear at a later time during the hearing today, and it would be appropriate for me to speak further at that time. But I would like to point out that with regard to resolution of veterans health care in the state, we are still at a very unsettled time in our state. A housing resolution is preeminent of importance. There have been literally hundreds of thousands of people dislocated with not the ability to return as of this date and not likely for the foreseeable future. Although I'll be quick to point out that the dislocation is not permanent, nor does it mean that individuals have left the state. It's my hope that LSU and the necessary health care professionals and the VA can work together cooperatively going forward, but I would not want to arbitrarily forego a load of bricks anywhere else right at the moment until appropriate professional assessment is made of the continuing need within Louisiana. Our recovery effort is likely to be decades long. It looks as if the supplemental now pending is subject to some controversy, and if we are unfortunate enough not to receive additional assistance, it is going to be extremely important to have every other federal agency cooperating with us to the maximum of their legal authority. So I wanted to just put a statement on the record that I don't have the answer. I don't know what should be done today, but I don't have access to anyone who can tell me. And I'm going to await the professional judgment of those to tell me what future needs may look like and what it makes sense to, in the way of deployment of strategic federal resources, and certainly not to put people back in harm's way of a future storm. That would be the least level of responsibility that we could exhibit. So, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the courtesy of allowing to make this statement. I understand that LSU is to be heard later, and I may revisit the subject at that time. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you very much. Does anyone have any follow-up questions with this panel? If anyone may has questions for the record, you can please submit them. We're going to have six votes. Is it up right now? We're going to have six votes. So this first panel is excused, and I apologize to the second panel. Dr. Greenberg, when's your flight? All right. We'll stand in recess, and we will adjourn immediately after the sixth vote. send me a note. full committee of the House Veterans Affairs will come to order. If the second panel will please come forward, witnesses. Please take your seats at the witness table. While the second panel moves forward, let me provide a brief introduction of each of the panelists. Mr. Michael E. Moreland is the Director and Chief Executive Officer of the VA Pittsburgh Healthcare System. Mr. Moreland oversees the management of three campuses with 692 operating beds distributed among medicine, surgery, psychiatry, intermediate care, nursing home care, and domiciliary. Dr. Ray Greenberg became the eighth president of the Medical University of South Carolina and is the professor I know you're still teaching. Biometry and epidemiology. I guess I just didn't know that. I thought the whole admin kept you so busy, but you're still in the classroom. Not very often. So it's a nice title to have on the side. I don't mean to bust you publicly, but congratulations. We also have with us is Mr. Donald Smithberg, currently serves as the Chief Executive Officer of Louisiana State University, LSU, Healthcare System Division, headquartered in Baton Rouge. Responsible for 9 hospitals across southern and south central Louisiana, LSU provides the vast majority of care to the uninsured and working poor in the state of Louisiana. Gentlemen, I want to thank you for making the trip here to Washington, D.C. to testify before the committee. Let me also extend an apology. Sometimes you get 6 votes in the middle of a committee hearing, and members, they get all together, and then they scatter. And we had such good rhythm going, and hopefully some members will return. What's most important is that we're able to get this on the public record, and we can have a good discussion. And I'm pleased that Chairman Brown is here. Let me turn to the witnesses for the second panel and ask Dr. Greenberg, you're recognized for testimony.
And we look forward to the opportunity to expand that relationship. As we explore opportunities to build on our already existing collaboration, we're driven by one primary motivation, and that's to improve the care of the veteran population that we and the Veterans Affairs serve. Let me be clear here. Veterans in the Charleston area today, in my opinion, get absolutely excellent medical care. So, why then, if things are going so well, would we be motivated to make any changes? To me, there are really 2 fundamental reasons for this. The first is that hospital care is becoming increasingly complicated, in part because today only the sickest patients are admitted to hospitals. And secondly, the technology that's used to care for these patients has grown ever more complex and expensive. Personnel shortages and expensive technology drive up the costs of health care. And you as legislators and we as healthcare providers have a shared mutual interest in assuring that healthcare delivery operates as efficiently as possible. So how then can we be more cost effective? As Mr. Moreland is going to describe in more detail in his testimony, one of the most attractive opportunities for us is to avoid redundancy in building and operating separate, expensive, highly specialized diagnostic and treatment equipment and facilities. By sharing resources, we can save and avoid duplicative capital investments. This type of partnership has been undertaken successfully by the Department of Veterans Affairs elsewhere on a somewhat limited basis. What we're proposing is to build upon those successes by expanding the level of collaboration, and we are prepared to be an immediate test case. The opportunity to take our working relationship to a higher level was created by the Medical University's decision to replace its 50-year-old teaching hospital. The site for the new hospital, presently in the first phase of construction, is immediately adjacent to the VA Medical Center. In the 2004 CARE study, a replacement VA Medical Center was not proposed in Charleston, but a specific recommendation was made to explore enhanced collaborations with the medical university. In August of 2005, Undersecretary for Health of the Department of Veterans Affairs, Undersecretary Perlin, cited the recommendations of the CARES report and charged representatives of the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Medical University, and I'm quoting here, to determine what, if any, mutually beneficial consolidation should occur between the Charleston VA Medical Center and MUSC. A working group was formed to study that. I was privileged to co-chair it with Mr. Moreland, the director of the VA Pittsburgh Healthcare System. With your indulgence, Mr. Chairman, I'd really like to take this opportunity to thank Mr. Moreland and his colleagues from the Department of Veterans Affairs for the diligence that they approached this assignment with. By December of this past year, a final report was prepared which summarized our findings. With your permission, I'd like to submit a copy of that report, which I have with me for the record today.
Hearing no objections, so ordered.
The steering committee focused on...
Will the gentleman pause for just... This is a pretty long document, right?
It's about 40 or 50 pages.
So if you would revise your request, if you would make this submitted for part of the written record of today, no, that won't do it either. All right, let's do this. I would ask you unanimous consent that this be made, that your proffer be made part of the official record, but not part of the written record. Would that?
That would be perfect.
All right, hearing no objections, so ordered.
The steering group focused on collaborative efforts that would increase the quality of services, lower overall facility and operating costs, and ensure optimal use of the land resources. It was agreed that any model of integration would be essential for the VA to have its own bed tower, including general medical and surgical ICU beds. This facility would be clearly identified and designated as the VA Medical Center. Veterans would be housed with other veterans and would not be intermingled with other patients. Staffing on these wards would continue to be provided by VA personnel. All of these were issues that were expressed to us as important by the veteran service organizations and the employees of the VA Medical Center. The opportunities for sharing come in the various support areas, and in particular the expensive technology-intensive areas such as operating rooms and cardiac catheterization labs. In scheduling the use of these resources, veterans would be given the same or higher priority as non-veteran patients. By sharing these resources, both the VA Medical Center and MUSC could lower their operating costs. In the process, we could also assure that the latest technology is available to both patient populations, and in particular that local veterans would not have to travel great distances to get these same specialized services. With agreement to this basic concept, we then explored several models of sharing. And at the risk of oversimplification, let me say that these models differed with respect to the size and contents of the facility to be built by the VA Medical Center. A very interesting observation that came out of this was that despite initial significant differences in construction costs for the various models, if you looked over the 30-year life cycle cost, there were really very modest differences between them. For example, if you took the most extensive model and then you compared that to not replacing the VA Medical Center at all, over 30 years of life cycle cost, there was only about a 10% differential. In other words, for a premium of about 10%, veterans could receive care in a brand new state-of-the-art facility as opposed to one that is today 40 years old, and by the time at the end of that 30-year period would be 70 years old. There was further good work that came out of the evaluation in that the group focused on governance issues concluded that we could create an advisory structure for sharing opportunities without undermining any of the existing authorities of either the VA or the MUSC executive leadership teams. And the work group on legal matters concluded that all of the necessary authorities required for both construction and contracting already are well established, so there should not be a requirement for any additional statutory changes. In choosing between the various models, at least two important considerations surfaced. First, there's the very pragmatic question of the amount of money the federal government can afford to invest in constructing a new VA Medical Center facility. This is a resource allocation question that clearly went beyond the scope of our assignment as a steering group. The second key issue that arose during our evaluation was whether VA facilities would be required to be built to the new federal guidelines for homeland security. These guidelines, while understandable and defensible for safety purposes, raise construction costs an estimated 30%. Thus, it would be more expensive for the VA Medical Center to build shared space than for an outside entity to do so. For the purposes of our analysis, we assumed that the safety standards would have to be met. If it turns out that those guidelines are not required, our estimates of VA Medical Center construction costs can be revised downwards by about 30%. A related issue is the fact that the existing VA Medical Center is in a flood zone, and as it was designed more than four decades ago, it is vulnerable to a major hurricane. While we're about to hear about the situation in Hurricane Katrina, it seems particularly prudent at this time to make sure that similar disasters don't occur to other VA Medical Center facilities that are in hurricane areas. If the committee and the Department of Veterans Affairs find favor in our recommendations, there clearly is further work that needs to be done. We need to move from the macro level of the initial evaluation that's been completed to the micro level of really focusing on operational issues. Our suggestion is that we formalize an initiative as a demonstration project. We appoint a working group to develop an implementation plan, and we allocate appropriate resources for that effort. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for your time.
You're now recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, for this opportunity to testify on the important topic of improving veterans' access to care through collaborations. In my experience as the director of the VA Pittsburgh Healthcare System and at other facilities, I have participated in a number of positive collaborations. I also am familiar with a variety of collaborations that have worked well for my VA colleagues. Today, I will share a few examples and provide an overview of the collaborative study that I was privileged to co-chair with Dr. Greenberg, and I too congratulate Dr. Greenberg for such wonderful staff and the great work we did together. But I'll go ahead and talk a little bit about that and the potential sharing opportunities between the Charleston VA and the Medical University of South Carolina. First, I want to outline in general terms the process I have used to determine whether particular collaborations were likely to be in the best interest of veterans. For a collaboration opportunity to be considered favorably, it should increase veterans' access, improve quality through service enhancements, and provide VA with improved efficiency. As one would expect, if two organizations can share a capital expense rather than duplicating it, they will save money on equipment and buildings. Those funds can then be used to enhance services. When deciding whether to consider sharing a given resource, we first determine the cost of providing that service independently. Then costs are developed for joint delivery of that service. For a collaboration to be considered a good sharing opportunity for VA, it must be more efficient for VA to deliver that service in collaboration with another entity, or the sharing might provide an enhancement to care that VA could not offer independently. The quality of the service delivered has to be as good or better than what is currently provided. The best sharing opportunities improve services while saving cost. To make these comparisons, data relating to demand and capacity for particular types of care, trends in the quality of service delivery, and cost information are reviewed. A good example of a sound collaboration is the Charleston VAMC and MUSC planned sharing of high-tech equipment. Veterans and patients of MUSC will have access to care enhancement, and the cost of each organization will be improved by sharing the equipment and the expense. The type of sharing arrangement used in this case allows the VA to make a capital investment upfront that is then recouped through revenue that supports operating expenses for several years. In Pittsburgh, VA collaborated with the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania in providing long-term care to the state's veterans. VA provided the state with land on the grounds of the Pittsburgh healthcare system and a grant for the construction of a long-term care facility. The state, under a sharing agreement, purchased services from VA to assist in the operation of that facility. This facility offers several levels of care that are in great demand in Allegheny County with its large population of aging veterans. The Buffalo VAMC contributed $250,000 toward the purchase of a new PET scanner for University Nuclear Medicine, Inc. VA's purchasing power resulted in a lower price. The university group operates the scanner, and VA purchases services at a negotiated reduced rate. Again, the community and its veterans benefit from additional services, and both organizations reduce cost. I completed a similar arrangement while I was the director of the Butler VA, in which VA purchased a CT scanner that was installed in and operated by the community hospital. VA then received access to very low-cost CT services for veterans, and the community benefited through the availability of high-tech equipment that local facility could not readily afford. In all of these arrangements, there are numerous legal and technical details that require careful planning. In each instance, the arrangements are a good financial deal for veterans. For funds that are saved through these collaborations support other service enhancements. Savings like these assist us in maintaining and enhancing care in an era of burgeoning demand for VA care and continually escalating health care costs. On occasion, I have been presented with opportunities for collaboration that were presented as good deals for the VA. However, financial analysis revealed the proposals either to increase operating expenses over current expenses or to require upfront financial outlays without a reasonable return on investment. While this may seem obvious, it is important to note that any prospective collaboration must be considered on its own financial merit. The Collaborative Opportunity Steering Group that developed sharing options for the VAMC in Charleston and MUSC presented an opportunity to consider taking this type of sharing to a much broader level. This group developed options for joint construction, as Dr. Greenberg described, of new facilities that would maintain both organizations' identities and independent mission, while sharing some of the enormous cost burden associated with replacing aging health care facilities. The group was able to identify viable models for such construction. By sharing some of the higher cost infrastructure, both VA and the university could reduce the investment required to build and operate new facilities. As I mentioned earlier, this group identified opportunities to collaborate in the purchase of high-tech equipment that will make new state-of-the-art services available to veterans and other residents of South Carolina that might not otherwise be feasible for either organization to provide independently. The successful experience VA has had in this type of sharing at other facilities enabled this group to recognize this opportunity in Charleston. The plan for equipment sharing in Charleston is in the process of being implemented. I believe Dr. Perlin mentioned that $7 million in equipment funds have already been transferred to the VA in Charleston. Draft documents are being prepared to complete this process. Collaborative opportunities abound as private and public sector facilities across the nation are seeking to upgrade aging infrastructure and bring state-of-the-art care to their communities. With thoughtful planning, these collaborations can be mutually advantageous and provide VA with opportunities to assure that veterans have access to the latest technology at a more efficient cost. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Mr. Smithberg, you're now recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Don Smithberg, CEO of the LSU Hospitals and Clinic System in Louisiana. I thank you for your interest in healthcare in Louisiana after Katrina and Rita in particular. I also thank you for the invitation to appear today and the opportunity to answer any questions you may have about Louisiana State Public Hospital System, especially as a potential partner with the Veterans Administration in New Orleans. I represent 9 of the 11 state public hospitals and over 300 clinics that traditionally have been called the Charity Hospital System in Louisiana. I'd like to briefly describe that for you. Our hospitals and their clinics constitute the healthcare safety net for the state's uninsured and underinsured, particularly the working uninsured. Fully two-thirds of our patients are hardworking Americans. In your states, this role is generally a local government function, but in Louisiana, it's the responsibility of a state-run and statewide hospital and clinic referral system under the aegis of Louisiana State University, LSU. This system has been in place for 270 years. The LSU hospitals also have had an integral role in supporting the education programs of our medical schools and training institutions for generations. And that includes not only LSU, but also Tulane University and the Ochsner Clinic Foundation. Our system flagship is in New Orleans and commonly is known as Big Charity, which is actually two hospitals, Charity and University, operated under one medical center umbrella. Big Charity has been in operation since 1736, making it the second longest continuously operating hospital in the United States. At our New Orleans facility alone, there are over 1,000 Tulane and LSU medical students and medical residents in training, and many more nursing and allied health students, plus thousands of staff when Katrina struck and then her floods devastated our institution. Some of these very same students and faculty had rotations at the VA hospital in New Orleans as well. As the flagship of our statewide system, Charity Hospital sits just a stone's throw from the VA hospital. Big Charity operated the only level one trauma center that served South Louisiana and much of the Gulf Coast. Today, these facilities sit in ruins. Charity Hospital has been deemed uninhabitable and unsalvageable for healthcare by consulting engineers, and the somewhat younger University Hospital that we operate, it's only 35 years old, although severely damaged and not viable in the long term, will be temporarily propped up as an interim solution toward New Orleans' critical need for health services. And we're seeing our patient population grow steadily every day, up to 300 patients a day that we are seeing in tents, a series of 10 tents currently operating in the convention center, about to be relocated to an abandoned department store. Time does not allow me to go into detail about what we're seeing in terms of the population change and demographic nature of our community, but I can tell you that a replacement hospital is absolutely critical. We see the potential collaboration with the Veterans Administration and Louisiana State Public Hospital System as one propelled by unintended opportunity. With both systems' hospitals in New Orleans devastated by Katrina and her floods, we stand at a rare moment in time, a chance to jointly design and cooperatively operate a new facility that meets the needs of both institutions and the patients they serve, while at the same time achieving significantly enhanced efficiency, cost savings, and quality health care. The integrated structure and vision of the VA system has permitted it to become a leader in the development and use of electronic records. You know this. It has made tremendous progress in this and other areas in the last decade. Electronic medical records also are a high priority for LSU, although we're not as far along as the VA. In fact, in my view, the VA is more advanced in information technology than most in the healthcare industry. The collaboration of the VA and LSU, in the narrowest view, offers the opportunity to solve the immediate facility problem of the two systems in New Orleans. But it is also an enlightened and visionary step that will create a major asset for rebuilding community and a base from which to better serve the patients who depend on us. Governor Blanco and her and our legislative leaders from both sides of the aisle have recognized and embraced the benefits of collaboration with the VA. The media has extolled the virtues of this potential collaborative, despite so much coverage about what has gone wrong in dealing with the hurricane zone. Thoughtful editorials have applauded this effort as a real diamond in the rough. We welcome involvement from other allies, and together we can take advantage of an historic opportunity to improve care for those we serve and at the same time help to rebuild a major American city. Thank you again for your interest and for this opportunity to share LSU's perspective on this critical matter.
All right, thank you very much. I want to help get this right in my mind. We, on the committee, are moving in this sort of trend from the collaboration with personnel, equipment, and then to facilities with university hospitals. University hospitals. So my sensing here is that this is not all really defined all that well at the moment. So if you've got, you have a university hospital, in New Orleans, correct? You have a university hospital and you have Charity?
They're both one institution with two buildings with distinct names, but they're one medical center that serve as an academic medical center. One happens to be called University Hospital, but they're both the primary teaching hospitals for LSU and Tulane.
All right. You know what? We kind of have this also in Indianapolis. We have the University Hospital next to our VA, and we have Wishard. And Wishard is sort of the safety net hospital.
We're both.
Seems to be.
Mr. Chairman, we're both.
But your charity hospital is also run, is owned by the state of Louisiana.
The charity hospital and University Hospital are, for all intents and purposes, one and the same.
Oh, you can't answer it like that.
Well,
tell me what the legal standing is.
The legal standing is that they are both one Medicare provider number, which identifies the institution. They are both entities of LSU, which is an instrumentality of state government.
All right, there we go.
They are both, via contracts, teaching hospitals for LSU School of Medicine, Dentistry, Nursing, Allied Health, and their counterparts at Tulane. All of the primary training programs of those institutions go through charity. There's one management team. The CEO of what we call the Medical Center of Louisiana, New Orleans, it's charity and university. One medical center has one management team that reports to me.
Well, I don't want there to be confusion out there across the country in different cities either. If we're going to do a collaboration and we do it with medical universities, we want to make sure that you're going to change the names on any of these things?
We're certainly open to that, sir.
You're open to it. Great. I just want to make sure that our collaboration, if we do our collaborations with university hospitals, I don't want some other city to go, well, you know, I've got my non-for-profit over here, and why can't that? I don't want to do that. We can get away.
Could I try to?
Our trend line here is we do collaborations with agencies of federal government, which isn't as easy as I just said it. Amazes me, but it should be a lot easier, right? So then we say, you know what? There should not be anything wrong with a relationship between the federal government and state government with regard to facilities. But I don't want to send the wrong message out there in the country that that we're going to do a collaborative effort with charity hospital. Names are pretty doggone important. I just want to let you know. I'd love to make sure that we label and title this as a collaborative effort between the VA and LSU, the University Hospital at LSU.
I can tell you right now, Mr. Chairman, the MOU that the VA signed with us is with LSU Healthcare Services Division. It is with LSU.
All right.
And that will be the arrangement
going forward. All right. You just put me to rest. I appreciate that.
Sorry for the confusion.
No. That's all right. And your present university hospital, you're going to utilize, how are you going to use, charity you can't go back into? That's correct?
Correct. Yes, sir.
And why can you utilize part of the university hospital?
Well, it was not our first choice. There are very few physical assets that can be used for healthcare purposes in the market right now. We are leasing a building from another institution that was not badly flooded to prop up a temporary trauma center. It's actually not even in the city of New Orleans. And then we searched and searched to see if there was another building we could lease, renovate with FEMA's help, and prop up as a temporary hospital until we got a permanent replacement. Such assets were not available to us, and so our last-ditch effort was to look within our own asset base and see what it would take, and FEMA has helped us figure out what it would take to temporarily use one of our buildings, which is called University Hospital, to provide about 200 beds. The jury is still out as to whether we can really do it, but FEMA has approved a work order to try to make that happen, and it will take some doing. And will probably cost tens, if not over $100 million, just to temporarily prop it up.
Mr. Moreland, let me go back this. I come to see you as one of the more forward thinkers in the department. And I'm thankful for your involvement in working with Dr. Greenberg. And having spoken with Dr. Greenberg, his feelings, I think, reflect mine about you. Given Dr. Greenberg's testimony with regard to, he says, our suggestion is to formalize this initiative as a demonstration project, appoint a working group to develop an implementation plan, allocate appropriate resources to that effort. The word our, let me hit both of you here. The word our, Dr. Greenberg, means who? Does that mean you and Mr. Moreland, or does our mean you at the university?
Mr. Moreland and I agree on many things, but I'm speaking only for myself in that instance. I'm speaking on behalf of the university.
Okay. Now, Mr. Moreland, let me ask for your counsel with regard to Dr. Greenberg's suggestion.
My understanding of the project and where it sits at this moment is the report that we, Dr. Greenberg and I, submitted has been reviewed by Dr. Perlin, and it has now been forwarded up the chain to the Secretary's Capital Asset Board. My understanding is that board will then review that and they'll propose further action. And so that's where I understand the process to be.
You know, we've got ourselves in this situation, Dr. Greenberg, where you and Mr. Moreland were working on a particular project, and are you about to be overtaken? And it's I look at this as your work product is of tremendous value because you've front-loaded an ambition with regard to New Orleans. But your work is not done. And as we take your work to a second stage, that continues to be helpful to us also in New Orleans, but as we also then get judgment on what actions to take in Charleston. So, someone made a comment one time of saying, well, Charleston wasn't in the cares on hospital priorities. I don't think that's completely accurate at all. You're right. Charleston was mentioning CARES to do this collaborative effort, to do the investigation. Now this is what it's showing us to do. So when I look out there in the horizon of the hospitals that we need to build, there are five of them. And so it's Las Vegas and Denver and Charleston, Orlando and New Orleans. Those are the five that are in front of us. That is a very large dollar figure on how to do this. And so the committee wants to make the best judgment in the interest of the veterans to do that. And the challenge here is how we step it into the next phase, continue your work, and the question is on what timeline does it strike that benefits your construction timeline in Charleston? That's a challenge, Dr. Greenberg.
Yes, it is, Mr. Chairman. And I guess I would start by saying, to me, the development in New Orleans with respect to LSU is both good news and bad news. I mean, what the good news is that already the Department of Veterans Affairs and another academic medical center have recognized the value of the partnership that we've begun to develop. So we've talked about this as a national model. Today was the first day I heard it really described as the Charleston model, but we've always thought of this as a test case for replication elsewhere. And the fact that it is so quickly, the ink is hardly dry on our December report, and it's already being proposed elsewhere, to me suggests the obvious value and benefit of it. I mean, it's already being emulated. We don't have to wait for years for somebody to emulate it. On the other hand, I think your point is extremely well taken, that we're only the first step or two into a multi-step process. And it would be discouraging to me if we didn't take further steps down that implementation process. And that's complicated by the fact that we are in the process of building a replacement hospital right now. that will be complete, the first phase of which will be completed within a year. This opportunity is really in the second phase, which we would like to undertake in about 3 or 4 years, begin the construction of that. So the longer the delay, the less likely that we could actually do a project on the timeline that would make sense both for the department and for the medical university. And to me, that would be an opportunity lost, because I think the ideal thing is to bring the timelines as close to mutual interest as possible.
Well, Mr. Smithberg, just say thank you to you, because actually you're designing the blueprint and for what could happen in New Orleans. So what we kind of have here is that it's in your interest to continue to do the lift for which you do not receive the immediate benefit. It's kind of weird, isn't it? It's kind of off, you know what I mean? But but what you're doing is right, because you're developing the model to be leveraged, but you don't get to be first. I know you'd like that. But there is an immediate need right now and a national focus in New Orleans. That's a reality. I think that's in front of us. I mean, would you agree?
Absolutely. I think every leader of every academic medical center in the United States would say that our colleagues in New Orleans deserve every consideration. I mean, especially those of us who live in an area that's been severely hit by hurricanes in the past, and so we know what damage can result. We have tremendous empathy for our colleagues in New Orleans, and if there's any part of the country that deserves special consideration right now, it certainly is New Orleans.
You know, Mr. Moreland, Dr. Greenberg, what you do here is you design it, you build the model, you do the blueprint, and LSU, guess what? You get to go first. My benefit comes from any mistakes that you make. I mean, you are going to get some benefit out of this. I mean, because there's going to be some challenges, 10,000 decisions to be made. You hope for the best, right? And there's a great learning curve that we're going to have through it, right? I mean, is it kind of, don't you agree that's kind of where we're going here? I want to talk this through.
Well, I can only share with you that in setting up the Collaborative Opportunity Steering Group in New Orleans, I've already, in my discussions with Mr. Smithberg, we've identified some adjustments and minor modifications to the process from things that Dr. Greenberg and I learned in the first process. So I do think that, you know, some of the lessons that we learned in that process will transition to make the next review even better.
I would submit to you, Mr. Chairman, that about the last thing I would want to have happen is for our potential endeavor to supplant, slow, or erode the progress in Charleston. Unfortunately, Mother Nature kind of didn't pick her timing, and so regrettably the New Orleans VA and the LSU system is out on the street. But I think at the same time, because we're forced to be in a fast-track situation, that hopefully, while we're going to take a number of pages out of Dr. Greenberg's playbook, we may help write a few for him as well along the trail, and we'll have some.
All right, so let me do it like this. So I'm trying to figure this out. Mr. Moreland, you're intimately involved in both?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I've been provided the wonderful opportunity of being the chair of
I'm proud of you.
Collaborative Opportunity.
I'm proud of you.
Yes, sir.
Now, you've got your work you've done in Charleston. Charleston is getting a little impatient. They want to go to the next phase. They want to proceed on. You've got New Orleans going on over here. What is the best way to proceed? Are we really going to say we take your work product that you've got from the steering group, the Charleston model, you take that over to the LSU model, and that second phase that we're talking about, or where we need to go next to drill it down from macro to micro, does that really, to keep, because LSU perhaps could go first, is that we need to drill it down with them as opposed to drilling it down with Dr. Greenberg? I'm trying to figure out methodology here.
Yeah,
Have you thought about that?
I'm not sure I can answer that question today. I think that's an excellent question. And, you know, I'm not sure.
Because his is on the fast track.
Right. And I'm not sure that one necessarily has to delay consideration of the next phases in Charleston while we're doing the evaluation in Louisiana. The funding issue is outside of my purview, you know.
I understand.
My issue is to go down to New Orleans and get this first step in New Orleans started. And I will certainly do that.
So with regard to Dr. Greenberg's suggestion then, to formalize the initiative as a demonstration project, to appoint a working group that drills down into the next phase is what you're talking about, right, Dr. Greenberg?
Yes,
is that what you mean by this?
Yes, sir.
To develop the implementation plan. So, Mr. Moreland, you're do you concur with that we can do that while you're also then drilling, you're doing, because you're replicating?
Right. What I'm suggesting is that the Charleston project has been sent to the Secretary's Construction Advisory Board. Depending on what happens at the end of that process, what Dr. Greenberg proposes may be very appropriate to proceed independent of New Orleans. But that depends on what happens at the Secretary's CAB.
Well, I mean, I want you to help us here. I mean, you're in a very unique position. You're going to give counsel to this committee. You give counsel to the secretary. You're sitting in the hot seat between Charleston and New Orleans. New Orleans has a priority of the country, and they're two of five to be built. So I'm going to drill this down. Your counsel to us would be that this committee should embrace the suggestion of Dr. Greenberg as we continue to focus on New Orleans. If I'm misspoken, correct me.
I would say that the committee report that we provided to the undersecretary has been forwarded to the secretary's provide there. I'm not really in a position to recommend what happens with Dr. Greensburg's proposal, because that's really outside of my scope. What I'm focused very much on is evaluating opportunities for collaboration and putting that discussion together so we can then move that.
All right. I know you don't want to get out of your lane. Your testimony, though, to us is that it is possible to do both of these at the same time, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm no interest in getting you in trouble. I'm just, you're in a really unique position here for counsel.
Yeah.
But I can read between the lines. Okay? Let me yield to Chairman Brown, questions he may have.
Mr. Chairman, let me apologize first to the panel. We have a bill on the floor that is close to my heart, and I had to go make testimony there, and I apologize for not having the complete dialogue, but I really do appreciate you coming and being a part of the first panel, and you had privy to that dialogue too. And Mr. Chairman, I know that you've asked some good leading questions, and I don't want to go into part of duplicating those questions, but I know that I just would like to thank the whole group for working, and Dr. Greenberg, I don't know whether anybody's asked this question or not, but which model included in the final report has MUSC identified as being the most viable?
Well, Chairman Brown, I think they're all viable in a sense. I think it's very difficult for someone sitting outside of the appropriation process to ask the question, what is a reasonable investment to make, because there clearly are resource differences. I think when one makes that appropriation decision, I hope the focus, inevitably I understand the political realities of having to look at how much is spent in a particular year, but the reality is what I learned in this process, and I would not have guessed till we got into the analysis, is that if you look over the long haul, the cost differential is really relatively minor between these. And so I would hate for that to be the deciding factor between them. Personally, I think that the model, I think it's described as A1, in which the VA builds its bed tower plus the shared resources, and the medical university builds its separate bed tower, probably is the most logical way to proceed, as long as you can coordinate the construction. But I do think a significant open question at the moment is what security standards the VA facility will have to be built to, because the estimate, and it's only an estimate at this point because no facility has yet been built to those standards, is that it will inflate the cost about 30%. And so that would shift you towards having another party build that the shared component and save the differential in cost. So I think that question does need to be answered, and I realize that there are other considerations involved in answering that question, but it's hard to give a final answer without knowing that.
I know this past Friday I met with the city of Charleston concerned about just normal flooding when there's high tide and you know, little abnormal rainfall, and I know that the VA hospital is actually sitting in the middle of that, you know, that problem, and so I'm just amazed that you know, seemed like something must be done if in effect we had anything close to Katrina, that the Veterans Hospital would be really in serious trouble. And I don't know whether that is being evaluated as we look at the, you know, the overall need to address, you know, some modification. And so I know it's a major problem is the drainage problem. And
it's an important question, because the GAO has studied the state of the existing facility, and they said it's in adequate condition. It doesn't need immediate replacement. But that same conclusion might have been reached in the VA facilities in New Orleans before Hurricane Katrina. I mean, all it takes is one extraordinary adverse event to completely destroy the facility. We've seen that. So just as in all aspects of medicine, I think we have to focus as much on prevention as we do on treatment after the fact, after the disease has already taken place, in this case, the natural disaster. We need to do everything we can to bring the facilities up to speed in New Orleans, but we also need to make sure that we don't find ourselves in the same position in other communities that have just the same level of exposure in the future. We don't want to be dealing with the same kind of reality that Mr. Smithberg is dealing with right now.
Will the gentleman yield? Your hospital, is it at sea level, or how much feet above sea level is your hospital and the VA?
The new hospital is raised 15 feet off the ground. Plus, it's gone through extensive hurricane testing. There's a facility in Florida where they shoot projectiles at it at 200 plus miles an hour. So it's been very rigorously tested to withstand this kind of storm.
Mr. Moreland, do you know what the VA hospital is in Charleston? Whether it's at sea level?
I don't recall. I know that in our evaluation we did look at that, and I also am aware that VA is in the process of evaluating hardening of VAs in coastal areas that are in danger of hurricane and flood damage.
All right, thank you. Mr. Brown?
I don't know exactly the sea level yardstick, Mr. Chairman, but I know it's just visibly it's a good bit lower than the facilities being built by the Medic University. And like I said, I met with those people on Friday. It's the whole region down there around the Crosstown and Cannon and Spring Street are all impacted by this flood problem. But Ms. Smithberg, if I could ask you a question. I know we had the privilege to go down with the secretary to take a look at, you know, New Orleans and plus Biloxi and Beaumont. But can you describe LSU's relationship with the Charity Hospital in New Orleans, and how will Charity play into the collaborative project envisioned by LSU and VA? I know they all basically all there together in the same block. And
first, I would say, by way of governance structure, the Charity Hospital system is LSU. It's been for centuries branded. The hospital system has been branded informally as the Charity Hospitals, but it is LSU, a state-run land-grant institution. In terms of the collaborative that we've envisioned, it's really building upon a set of relationships that have been in place for a long time. You see, as you know, having toured the area, near the Superdome downtown, there is a medical district that is comprised of the VA, LSU, all of its health sciences schools, Tulane University, all of its health sciences schools, and the Delgado Community College and its health sciences training programs, and I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out inadvertently. We are a true medical corridor, if you will. What we have preliminarily discussed, and it's still very early in this potential marriage, but what we've discussed so far is a collaborative where, since the VA needs to replace itself, it has determined we clearly have that there will be some real synergies in doing some things together, like one common power plant, maybe one common cafeteria, other hotel-like functions that we might be able to collaborate on together, while at the same time not necessarily having to deal with formal governance issues. For the VA has a very rock-solid governance structure, and we think we do on the LSU state side. So this is the beginning of a journey that we want to explore opportunities for collaboration, and it could get much deeper, penetrate much deeper in terms of integration collaboration, or not, depending on what makes the most sense.
And one further question. I know we've talked about this before, and I know the population base in New Orleans is, you live in someplace else, and it seemed like to me it would be pretty difficult to track the the patient demand in the near future, and I don't know whether you can project it into the distant future or not, but at this point in time, what kind of model would you develop based on limited information?
Thank you, Chairman Brown. That's an excellent question, and it is very difficult to crystal ball the future population of New Orleans proper, but there are some that would expect that the population may not be localized as it was before, kind of inside, below sea level, inside the soup bowl, but a ring of new suburbs that are above that area, yet New Orleans will continue to thrive as a cultural and industrial center. It just won't have as many bedroom communities inside the donut, if you will, but outside of it. Who knows? But this we expect. Whatever it is we design, it will need to be scalable. I also am responsible for other markets in the state and have seen a real population surge in Baton Rouge and Lafayette, and our public hospitals there have seen almost a doubling in their patient population. What that tells us is that a lot of people are staying in state, and we know that there's a very strong desire for New Orleanians to get back home, whether the levees are replaced or not. We think that people are going to come back home. And so whatever it is we design and build, as Dr. Greenberg alluded to, and with his institution, it will be hurricane-hardened, and it will be flood-proof, and it will have a connection to a flyover interstate that is already adjacent to our medical center. But scalability is what is top priority for us. Whatever we build, easy to say, not so easy to do, but it needs to be able to flex up or flex down depending on what the population will bring to us.
If you had to make this projection today, I think the population around New Orleans was, what, around 600,000?
In the parish itself.
Right. And now it's less than 200,000, I believe.
Yes, sir.
And with those numbers, do you think it's going to take you 3 years or 5 years to get back to the 600? Or I guess my question is, I'm not trying to lead you into some decision that I want to hear, but I guess my question is the location where the present hospitals are today, is that the best location for the next 10 to 20 years?
It is a very good question, one that we want to study through this process. This, I will tell you, there are hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars of investment in facilities already on the ground, in the medical school, the research facilities, same with Tulane, that are okay, relatively speaking. Okay to us means we can get back in them in a year. And so that investment is there. And so to relocate our hospitals to another geographic location will have some That decision will have some bearing on how we look at ourselves as an academic institution, and proximity to our researchers who use our hospitals extensively and to our training programs who staff our hospitals primarily is an important factor to take into condition. That's into consideration. That's why hurricane hardening and flood proofing is absolutely essential if we stay where it is we have been traditionally.
It appeared to me that the hospital itself was structurally sound, but I know there's probably some mold and some other problems. You plan to raise that hospital and start over? Is that part of the plans? Or you plan to try to save some of the structure itself?
The two buildings, primary hospital buildings, one is called Charity Hospital and one's called University Hospital. In the case of Charity Hospital, extensive engineering reports have been conducted, and they show that the building is absolutely unsalvageable for healthcare use. Maybe there's some other reuse, but the damage to the mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and energy systems is pervasive. The extent of black mold and other molds, which you may not be able to see in the naked eye, permeates 21 stories of HVAC systems and the like. Extensive damage, because we were underwater for 3 weeks. Concerns about the stability of the foundation. It's a very old building. And so we do not necessarily intend to raise that building at this time. Frankly, it's an Art Deco kind of icon of architecture in the community, greatly loved. And so if there's a reuse for this facility, we're open for that. But raising it is not necessarily on our radar screen right now. But there are other sites on the campus that we've already identified that would be ideal, we think, for a major medical center.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman Brown. Dr. Greenberg, I want you to think about this, and I'm going to do a unanimous consent. I want you to think about, I'm going to ask you a question in a little bit on if I were to do this demonstration project as we move from the macro to micro, what are the principled areas for which you're considering? So I want you to think about that for a moment, and I ask unanimous consent that minority counsel be recognized to ask questions on behalf of the minority. Hearing no objections, so ordered. The gentleman is recognized for 5 minutes. Counsel for the minority.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've just got a couple of questions. The GAO report, or the GAO testimony, I should state, from September 26, 2005, states that they offered a hypothetical. VA may decide to purchase operating room services from MUSC. If the sharing agreement were dissolved at some point in the future, it would be difficult for VA to resume independent provision of these services. How do you, working through these study groups, how do you plan on addressing these issues? I mean, they seem to be very difficult. Mr. Moreland, I'm sorry.
That was one of the basic concepts that we tried to put into place in this study group, was that, you know, what happens and how do you set up a situation so these sharing agreements don't end up that one party can take advantage of the other. And so essentially what we did was build in, I think we called it mutual dependency, so that if MUSC is running the operating rooms hypothetically and the VA is providing laboratory services, there's a built-in incentive for MUSC to have a good working relationship with us in the operating room because they need to have a good working relationship with us in the laboratory. So that was the basic premise, that in order to set this up so that one party would be fair with the other.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Also, you state in the December report, Mr. Moreland, also Dr. Greenberg, that under Model A that was proposed, that there was a need for legislation. Can you be more specific on what legislation you think might be needed? And
I was looking for my counsel.
No, I think it's looking at 38 U.S.C. 8153, which is the sharing agreement provisions, that there was just, I noted in reading the report that it said that you recommend legislation. So I was curious what that might look like.
I don't think we proposed legislation. I think what we did was we proposed that there would be an issue that would require legislation, but we did not get to the point of actually developing what that legislation should look like.
So you haven't actually got to that point of specificity yet?
Correct.
Correct.
Is that what phase two is about?
That would be part of a phase two. Yes, sir.
Fantastic. Also, let me ask you again, Mr. Moreland. I'm sorry that you seem to be the one I keep asking questions of. You state in your testimony that, quote, "the good financial deal for veterans, previous collaboration arrangements, and that funds saved through these collaborations support other service enhancements." Can you really offer explicit examples of these service enhancements? I'm afraid that once, you know, it's held out as one of the promises of collaboration that money will be saved, the VA will save resources. But where does it disappear in a hole? Is there any really specific examples of how these things have worked out in the past and as a model for the future?
Yes, and if it's all right, I'll use the one that was really the simplest because I think that's the easiest one to provide a good answer to your question. When I was a director at the VA in Butler, I needed a CAT scan. And in evaluating how much it would cost to purchase a CAT scan and put it in my building and hire the staff to operate that CAT scan and the cost of the service agreement for maintenance of that CAT scan, I calculated how much it would cost to do that. Then I sat down with the CEO of the community hospital who also wanted to upgrade and buy a new CAT scan. And I was currently purchasing from him CAT scans. And so when I sat down and did the math comparison, what would it cost if I put one in my building and ran it? What would it cost if I just keep buying them from the community? And what would it cost if I were to purchase a CAT scan, place it in his building, have him operate it, and give the CAT scans with interpretation for me $1 each? When you sit down and did the math, I ended up it was much cheaper to put that machine into his building. What that did then was that my operating budget was reduced. Now, could I track where that dollar went? No, sir, I could not. What I could track, though, was that I treated another veteran, I provided more medication, I then turned around and enhanced my nursing staff on my inpatient unit for my nursing home. So I could point to what did I do with that money, and it did go back into enhancement of services.
Thank you very much. Also, just a general question on the TOMA therapy suite, the $7 million piece of equipment. I understand that it's not available anywhere in South or North Carolina. Sounds very interesting. What is the track of this? How is it moving forward? And have you worked out arrangements because it is not available to make it available to other facilities, and how do those work out legally?
Well, first, let me say that it wasn't available at any other facility at the time of this report. I can't tell you whether it is today or not. It is a new emerging therapy, and it's basically radiation therapy that can be given very precisely, so that what it does is limit the damage to normal tissue around the cancer that you're trying to irradiate. So it's much more precise targeting of the cancer, and therefore it really is a huge step forward in the advancement of such treatment. When you look at it from the VA point of view, they don't have a large enough patient population to justify purchasing this equipment for their own patients. And I'm not sure if even in the VISN there is this available. So it's not even a question of the distance that someone would have to travel to access it. At the medical university, we would probably have the volume. We would probably purchase this on our own. But this is an opportunity, it strikes me, to benefit the veterans population at the same time we'd be installing this for our own use. Of course, we see ourselves as a referral area for the entire state. And so it would, of course, be a resource through our operation of it that would be available to patients throughout the state of South Carolina.
Thank you. One more question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your indulgence. And anything kind of adding on to that, I think one of the problems that some have in addressing or looking at collaboration efforts is whether veterans get priority and how that priority works out, especially when you're dealing with a population that may have a more, I don't know, fundamentally legal obligation for their health care. Hence, you know, they buy insurance or they have some sort of provider relationship with a university hospital. Have you worked the details out in how that has worked out?
Well, as a general principle, we've certainly said that this does not make sense to go forward in a sharing relationship if veterans are treated as anything other than first-class citizens. I mean, the goal is to make sure that they have at least the access they have now. I would actually argue this increases their access because what it does is bring specialists and special equipment that they don't otherwise have access to in the local marketplace. They might, if they went to Atlanta or somewhere else, So to me, and when we sat down and talked with local veteran service organizations, they quickly have appreciated the fact that that this brings more opportunity to them rather than a limited opportunity. Your question, I think, leads us immediately, though, to the implementation questions. How do you monitor that you're actually doing that? And I think that really is the next phase. We didn't get to that point in our initial discussions, but I think there would have to be some accountability. And, of course, this is all becoming now automated, so it would be fairly easy on a regular basis to review waiting times for VA patients versus non-VA patients. And I personally would be dissatisfied with the outcome if we found that there was any differential between the two patient populations.
Mr. Moreland, could you also respond to this question?
Yeah, that's part of the agreement that's set up in the contract, which essentially says this piece of equipment continues to be owned by the VA. It's just in your building. You're operating it. And the university gets benefit and non-veterans, and the VA gets benefits and veterans. But essentially, the timeline standards are part of the negotiation, so that I know that if I refer a veteran into that machine, and I used the example I gave you earlier in Butler as an example, if I refer a veteran there, I expect them to get seen quickly. And you can identify that by the number of hours and the number of days, and you monitor that. And I just found that if you do that and you provide that feedback, there's no interest in that not working well. Because Dr. Greenberg doesn't want that to not work well, and nor do I. And so I don't think that'll be an issue. And I agree with you. It meets all the tenets. It increases access because currently veterans don't have access to that machine in Charleston. It enhances quality because you have access to that machine. And at the end of the day, it's going to be a financial good deal. It meets all three components of what we're trying to do. So I think this is an example of a win-win for everybody.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
All right. I thank the Minority Council for the questions because you're going right to the heart of it. If the university builds a bed tower and the VA then builds a bed tower, and then on the inside you share some of these medical equipments that then escalate the quality of the care, veterans are going to want to make sure that they have the access, they're treated like they'd be treated in a VA hospital, and so you're question went right to the heart of it. So I appreciate the gentleman's question, and I appreciate the answers you've just now given. I think where we are, Mr. Brown, is as you develop your construction budget, we're going to need to be some very good listeners here with regard to how we handle this one. Handle this meaning. Where are we with regard to Charleston, the collaborative working group? What does phase two mean? And what is this fast track now that Mr. Moreland has to do with regard to New Orleans? To help us in this, Dr. Greenberg, help the committee sort of define what is a phase two. If we move to a demo, what do you have in mind? And I'm also interested in your counsel to us, Mr. Moreland. I don't mean to jump ahead of where you would go, Henry, in your own subcommittee, but we got an opportunity here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the things I would like to do, and I say this as a tribute to Mr. Moreland, is sit down with Mr. Moreland and map out what a charge would be. I think the first, the obvious thing we need to do is clone Mr. Moreland, because he clearly needs to be in two places at the same time.
Can you also include now, in your counsel you're about to give, an expectancy, a timeline expectancy? I think it'll be sort of helpful to us, and whatever overlay that will be with regard to also actions taken with Louisiana.
To me, the principal issue is that we identified opportunities for sharing, and the good news on that was that there was agreement on both sides clinically about what services are the targets for sharing. But beyond doing that and doing some costing of construction, we really haven't gotten in at all to the operational issues. And so what I think we would need to focus on just as categorically would be looking at moving towards implementation. How would you actually operate this, not just build this shared facility, but on a day-to-day service of these of the clinical services involved, how would they be operated? To the best of my knowledge, the working group on clinical integration really just scratched the surface. They made considerable progress by identifying the category of services that might be shared, but not how they would actually be operated. And to me, that really is the fundamental question. I think 6 months is a reasonable period of time to do that. You always seem to have a faster time track than I do, and that probably is good because it keeps us accountable and as productive as we can be when you set time frames for us. But I think that these are moving to fairly complicated questions about how things would operate clinically, and I think 6 months is probably a reasonable time frame for that. I would hope that in parallel with this, we get answers to the questions about the security standards issue and some direction about the magnitude of investment that is reasonable for us to be thinking about so that it directs us towards an appropriate model. It will clearly be a model of sharing, but as of yet, we don't really know exactly how much should be shared. And so I don't want for us to work in isolation of the thought process about what's a reasonable fiscal investment to be making.
Mr. Moreland?
So what I'm suggesting is, opposed to having a work group, one might think about moving it to that next step, which is more of an official step, which is the design process. That's just explaining the natural progression of construction projects.
Can this be, if we were to say, instead of doing the a demo, actually, Dr. Ringer, what Mr. Moreland has just said trumps you big time, because what he's just said has just advanced this so far. You ought to just hug him right now.
That's why I like him so.
if we were to scrap your idea on demo and actually go to plan and design, let me just ask this though: in a planning phase, we would need to put in some language, I would think. We would need to put in some exact language helping to define what that phase two is. Because what we want to be able to do here is replicate. So if we're going to make this investment to examine all these clinical areas, integration for a successful operation, you want to be able to say, okay, we've made an investment, we're proceeding to do this in Charleston, but guess what? I am able to use our investment with what I'm about to do in New Orleans too, right? Because help me out here. I'm not.
Yeah, I think you're headed in a direction that I hope the conversation would move in, which is that I think it's a mistake to look at the situation in New Orleans and the situation in Charleston as being in conflict with each other.
I don't see them in conflict. We just got two different timelines.
Right. I suspect much of the work that would be involved in the design phase would have utility in both New Orleans and Charleston. There are some things that would be specific to a particular geographic configuration, but many of the operating principles would be largely the same. Now, it gets even more complicated if you've got three parties at the table, but I just think it's an opportunity for us to think about taking this to the next level, especially if it involves a significant investment, as Mr. Moreland has suggested, and thinking about those principles that span not just these two facilities, but hopefully would inform us in Las Vegas and Orlando and other places that one might be considering the same kind of thing. We don't have to reinvent the wheel uniquely in every geographic location. We should look at a model to the extent possible that can be replicated in each of these settings, with the understanding that there's always going to be some element of difference between the individual settings. But the more that we can make that can be transported from one setting to another, the more efficient the whole process will be.
I concur. The exporting of this model, let's take Ms. Berkeley's district for a second in Las Vegas. She has tremendous challenges because this is a population growth unlike any place in the country. And so what's design, plan and design today, by the time you get it built, may even be obsolete. I mean, her challenges are remarkable. But so she has an immediate need, while at the same time you've got this desire of a chancellor to build a medical university, but guess what? It's also not going to be, it'll be on a different timeline too, right? Because there's a tremendous amount of funding to pull something like that off. But if we know what the model is, as they construct it, something can be partnered to it at some point in time. And that's what we also want to be able to be receptive to that with Orlando. Orlando, the state of Florida, has an interest in putting the medical university there. Then we want to be able to build a facility that is receptive to that. So no differently than LSU, you've got the property, right? And you're going to, as I understand, you've got property and you want to be able to say to the VA, we have property, we're interested in the collaboration, and we want to be able to build this together and work it out together, right?
We have some of the property.
So, pardon?
We have some of the property and designs on the rest.
Okay, all right. So it's call it the most flexible model ever. You know what? The Charleston model is appropriate because Charleston's it's a pretty loving city, caring city. We're exporting your love. Chairman Brown, we'll allow you to close.
Mr. Chairman, I just would like to thank you for your interest and innovation and energy that you put on this project. And Mr. Moreland, Dr. Greenberg, Ms. Smithberg, we grateful for your energy that's been expressed today. And our whole commitment is to provide better health care for our veterans and our population as a whole. And I think this is a win-win, and certainly I'm like Dr. Greenberg. I don't see a conflict between Charleston and New Orleans. I think it's certainly a compliment to each other, and I think by moving them both at the same time, but certainly I think would have some numerical economic savings too. So I thank you all three, for being here and being part of this discussion. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We as a committee want to remain sensitive right now with regard to construction timelines across the country because they all have their own timelines and they all get really sensitive. Oh, my gosh, you got money for this one. Are we less a priority and that type of thing? We just want to get these things built. We want to get these hospitals built. We're going to embrace the suggestion of both of you. Your demonstration project, or do we really go to plan and design, or a hybrid thereof? And so we'll take that to the next step. We'll work with each other on how to define this properly. And so when we put together our construction budget, I think that'd probably be the best way to handle this. You agree? Okay. Thank you very much for coming to town, and really, congratulations. This hearing is now concluded.